is the meeting convened by the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. The main business of the day is to debate on issues related to what we call gender mainstreaming initiatives in the public service. And that debate is going to be led by the Public Service Commission. We took a decision earlier this year at our strategic planning session that we'd like to see ourselves as a portfolio committee organized such that we do have activity. We debating issues in the manner that we call stakeholders that deal with some of those issues or that they have opportunities to reflect on some of those issues to lead such debate. And we said, as a contribution by ourselves and the portfolio committee to this month being a very important month for a very important category of the people, the Women's Month, you know. We then said maybe let's actually reflect on these issues and debate on these issues related to gender mainstreaming. And the Public Service Commission is going to actually lead us there. That is the paper, that's the main issue for us coming together this morning. Before we hand over to Professor Sangweni to lead in this debate, and before we even introduce ourselves, let me acknowledge the presence of one counselor from Centurion who decided to come and visit us and be with us at this meeting, maybe to observe a multi-party portfolio of activities in action. We welcome the councillor. I'm told there is only one or two. Only one councillor. So I know we are anxious. We are anxious. The councillor is visiting a parliament. Can we ask the councillor to identify himself? Just right there. You are welcome. We are
a he's actually checking on his member of
parliament. Is he doing oversight on whether you are doing your work or not? Yeah, no. That's interesting how we can find ourselves interacting across the field. You know, that's very interesting. Colleague, we have to introduce ourselves and then so that we are all settled and ready to move. I'll start with members of the committee. Introduce myself. I'm Richard Baloy.
Kenneth Kumalo, member of the committee.
I should be member of the committee. Mr. Chair, well, this is very hot here, man. But is somebody trying to blow me up or what? It's hot here. Yeah.
It's really a problem. My name is Carlo Mini. I'm a member of the committee.
Chomo Nyambi, member of the committee.
Ndawa Chwabaza, member of the committee.
Jane Masumel, committee member.
Richard Kakana, committee member.
Jane Chebu, member.
Our visitors, the chairperson has introduced the practice here that all of us who happen to be in, we have to introduce ourselves.
He said, even if you are from the media, so that we can be able to...
No.
...the quality of reporting.
No, my name is Dr. Fritz. Yes, I'm an educator.
And then I'm Carson McDonald, Ward Councillor in Centurion, Swanee.
I'm Suraya Adhikari, I'm a parliamentary legal advisor. Makarima Shaw, Office of Public Service Commission.
Admiral Simpson, Office of the Public Service Commission.
Bani Sudha from SAMD.
Matayo Buseka, DPSA.
Nuno Hopani, DPSA.
Los Pogwaza, Office of the Public Service Commission.
Ms. Rapkin, Ministry of Public Service and Administration.
One person, please.
I'm Jane Fury. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thanks. We now all know each other. We can continue with the business of the day. Let me indicate that the. When we took a decision that this year we're going to run the business of the committee in a unique way, we said, whereas we may have, for instance, today, the PSC leading the debate on this issue, we also invite other stakeholders like the DPSA, SAMD, and the like, and they are actually in here. We have a presentation to be done by the PSC. I see there is some notes here from somebody and stuff like that. So we'll then say the PSC will lead us in this debate, but then we'll all come in during a discussion to all participate. Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Once again, we did welcome the opportunity to interact with the Portfolio Committee. On the delegation, might I just say at this stage, one of my colleagues, Dr. Norman Maharaj, will be joining us later on. He is at some other engagement out in Stellenbosch, but he will. As soon as he finishes that, join us. Chair, I don't think I need to say much. The office will be introducing this item, but perhaps just to make an observation here, that the two matters that have not moved any significantly, matters that have been rather sluggish on our transformation program, are the issue of people with disabilities on one hand and the gender issue on the other hand. I would hope that in the very near future we will also have the opportunity to address this matter of people with disabilities and perhaps a report like we are doing here today. But on matters in hand, the question of gender mainstreaming, we have the report here, and without much ado, I will ask the office to lead us in the presentation on this subject.
thank you very much. The Public Service Commission realized that the South African government has the constitution that promotes gender equality, and also it has bound itself with international instruments that also promote gender equality. Within the context of the fact that we have all these obligations, we felt that we have to continue and assess how far the government has progressed in this area. And the presentation will be in the following format. The outline is that the first part that we'll deal with will be objectives of the audit, why this study was conducted. The second item will be the key findings that we came upon. And the third item will be the graphic reflection. There were 24 departments that were part of the study. The fourth part of the report is recommendations and finally conclusions. As I said earlier when I started, within the context of slow progress in achieving affirmative action and the resulting detrimental impact in achieving gender equality, the Public Service Commission decided to analyze the study and analyze whether a gender mainstreaming is actually happening in the public service. The first objective was to provide the baseline, because although decisions have been taken earlier by the cabinet, for instance, that there should be gender mainstreaming target of 30% by 2005, there has not been a baseline to assess whether from to assess whether the 30% was achieved and how much people had moved from that baseline to 30%. The second objective was to develop a gender representativity profile describing progress made and status of departments on representativeness according to targets that have been set in the public service. And the third objective was to examine the extent to which empowerment of women has occurred in terms of the role as part of the executive structures of departments and their involvement in decision making, because gender mainstreaming is not only about numbers, it's also about involvement of women in those structures. The fourth objective is to establish whether there are family-friendly policies which take into account the social benefits of families, such as flexitime for men and women and childcare arrangements to support equal family responsibility. The next objective was to examine the impact that gender mainstreaming has had on management responses to both female and male staff members. The next objective was to examine the extent to which recruitment and promotion practices are utilized to enhance gender equality in employment and public service. The next objective was to examine how sensitive issues associated with gender relations are handled in departments. This includes cases of sexual harassment, because Labor Relations Act provides that sexual harassment policy should be in place in departments. The next objective is to propose interventions to implement gender mainstreaming in departments. Obviously, proposals will come as a result of findings that the study has found. The next objective was to examine the role that Office on the Status of Women plays in supporting and encouraging gender mainstreaming in public service, because this is one of the offices that has been set up mainly to make sure that the status of women is enhanced and also gender mainstreaming actually occurs. The findings that were developed after the study were that knowledge and understanding of gender mainstreaming is lacking. In most departments, we found that even at management level, people are not aware what gender mainstreaming is. In most instances, people confuse gender mainstreaming with numbers. Once people are, you know, we have reached numbers, we feel that we have done gender mainstreaming. It's a lot more than that. The other key finding that we found regarding knowledge and understanding of gender mainstreaming is that senior management does not know how to move from vision to action. In other words, even if they can have a policy that says this is what should happen, they can't move from that position. The third key finding that we found relating to understanding of gender mainstream is that the main reason for this is lack of knowledge and what needs to be changed. In other words, people will be given policies, but for them to be able to move forward, it's a bit difficult. The other key finding that we found is that provincial overview of women in senior positions, although the target was 30, we should remember that the initial target that was set by cabinet was in 1999, we should have reached 30, and this period was extended to 2005. When we conducted this study, the target of 30 at provincial level was not reached. We had 0.2% to go. We were below by 2.2%. And in terms of provincial analysis, and maybe before I go into this, I should mention that we had two departments in each and every province, and we also had six national departments in the study. Northwest Province overall was the one that performed far better. It had 33.4% of women at senior management level. Senior management level is from level 13 up to 16. This was followed by Limpopo. It also did very well. It went beyond the target of 30%. It had 2.5. And the following one was Mpumalanga and Gauteng. That was 30.6 each. Western Cape, unfortunately, did not fare well. It had only 23% of women at senior management level. And this is very sad because in the province of Western Cape, you have 64% of women employees in the public service. However, at management, you only have 23%. Across all provinces, there is a 10.4 difference between the one that has done very well and the one that has done the lowest. And that is in respect of Northwest, it's 33.4, in respect of Western Cape, it's 23%. Key findings in relation to the national department, the average percentage of women in senior positions in the national department was 31.2, which exceeded the 6% target that was set for 2005. And a similar trend in the national department is observed. Let me pause and mention that there are some departments that we traditionally regard as departments that employ a lot of women. And these departments are the ones that have the highest percentage of women managers in the provincial departments, and that is the Department of Health and Department of Social Development. And the same situation was found in the case of the National Department. The Department of Health and Department of Social Development had the highest number of women at senior management level. We also probed further. We didn't look only at women generally. We also looked at women with disabilities at senior management level. And we found that there are more male disabled senior managers than female senior managers. And in seven provinces, we found that there is not even a single female senior manager with disability. The other key finding that we found is that the empowerment of women generally is not happening. And this is purely because people talk about numbers and nothing beyond that. Apart from policies and practices that affect women, for instance, people putting in place sexual harassment policies, there isn't much that is happening in terms of recruitment, training, and addressing the practical needs of women for them to be able to operate at the management, at a senior management level. We also found that most of the departments proceed to have positions of people that will be managers of gender issues, but most of the time these women will be relegated to dealing with issues relating to special programs, for instance, setting up events for Women's Month, setting up events for 16 days of activism, and that's about it. Beyond that, these people are not able to do a lot more. And participants at senior management level argue that predominantly male culture is hard for their voices to be heard. And this is largely because the people that are responsible for gender mainstreaming in departments are at a very low level. Most of them were found to be at level 9. So if you're at level 9, it's not very easy for you to be able to sit in management or even have your manager take the issues that you're raising up to the sections that are relevant. The other key finding that we found is that there is lack of clearly defined institutional framework that is necessary to facilitate the attainment of issues of gender mainstreaming. The roles and responsibilities within national gender missionary needs to be clarified and then implemented, and institutions held accountable for its success or lack thereof within the public service. The national gender structures established to promote women's empowerment and gender equality, specifically OHW and Commission for Gender Equality, will need to be strengthened. What was found was that, for instance, the Office on the Status of Women, when we conducted the study, although it's in the president, it had only six officers. Three of them were people who would be called experts, and the other three were support staff. And it's virtually impossible to have six people driving such a huge program. Processes. Gender mainstreaming is not included in any departmental planning, monitoring, budgeting process, apart from ensuring that employment targets are met. And I want to emphasize that this is what was found across the board in most of the departments that had even the lowest number. To achieve gender equality, government must embark on a rigorous gender mainstreaming strategy. And gender mainstreaming strategy here would mean that the new targets that have been set, which are supposed to be met by 2009, have to be pushed. We most of the departments, as I said, have reached a 50% target. The next target that should be reached in 2009 is 50%. So that's one leg of gender mainstreaming. But over and above that, there should be planning and implementation of policies and strategies that have been put in place for promotion of women and also promotion of gender equality. The other issue that we found is that family-friendly policies that are in place are not really helping women to be able to do their work. For instance, women who want to take care of family responsibilities will use make use of family responsibility leave. There is nothing in Asia that has been put in place to assist women. And so not only women who would need such a time off to take care of the family, it's also men, because we also have men who have family responsibility. And I must say that family responsibility leave is a leave that's provided for everybody in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Family responsibility leave on its own, as I said, is not adequate, and therefore something else has to be added in over and above this. In addition, management still sees parenting as a woman's responsibility and responds with skepticism when men request time to attend parenting duties. And this is a typical gender stereotype. Is to say, when a man says, I want to take time off to be able to take care of the children, they would say he wants to do something else other than taking care of children. Management responses to gender mainstreaming. From the focus group discussions that we had, we also found that there is a lack of support of gender mainstreaming from senior management based on lack of understanding about how to do gender mainstreaming, as well as other mental services. We found that both in the case of female and also male managers, that if there are priorities that are supposed to compete with gender mainstreaming, they rather take others than stick to gender mainstreaming. We also found that there is lack of knowledge of gender mainstreaming coupled with conservative attitudes from senior management towards gender equity, and in many cases, this has a trickle-down effect. It also has to do with culture and the kind of attitudes of people towards gender mainstreaming and women empowerment. And we also found that there are no discussions about gender mainstreaming. There's no information flowing from senior management to lower levels. There's no support for those who are trying to drive gender mainstreaming. As I said earlier, they're at level 9, therefore they're not able to push these issues further. And there is no zero tolerance on sexual harassment. If sexual harassment happens, you know, it gets treated differently instead of what is supposed to happen. On recruitment and promotion practices, we found that in most departments, recruitment takes place according to employment exit targets as informed by the employment exit plan. Period. That's where people stop. And we also found that women feel disadvantaged from the onset because they have practical needs that impact on their ability to apply for certain jobs. For instance, if a person applies for a job that says you have to travel extensively, women would say, okay, it entails driving and, you know, traveling, my family comes first, so they would rather not apply. The other finding is that while there are no formal restrictions on recruitment of women into senior positions, some subtle discrimination might come into play, such as obstacles or perceptions about work that men and women should be doing. For example, secretarial work is generally seen as women's work. Gender relations. In general, relations between men and women are described as satisfactory and largely determined by position. Sorry. However, many women felt undermined, not respected, and appreciated by male colleagues. And these are male women who are at senior management level. They feel that even though they are at higher levels, male colleagues would sometimes undermine them. On the other hand, many women preferred having male as manager, citing that women bosses are much harder, less sympathetic and inflexible than their male counterparts. What was most significant was that the majority of women said that when women are in leadership, they do not stop their other women rules. They do not encourage the mobility of other women and generally behave more like men and even worse. Those are perceptions. Sexual harassment. Junior and senior staff display a lack of knowledge of and understanding of sexual harassment. And this is likely because people have not been sensitized about what sexual harassment is. And some in some of the departments, we found that they have not gone to do what is expected of them. In other words, putting together policies on sexual harassment. And therefore, if they don't have a policy, people would not be aware of what sexual harassment entails. Often what was cited was that people who are victimized are fearing that if they go report, there will be what we can call secondary victimization. And also the fact that they fear that the perpetrator and other colleagues who are sympathetic to the perpetrator might gang against the person that has lost a grievance, and there won't be any sympathy displayed against the victim. And one of the issues that was mentioned in one focus group was that they would say to a victim that the man has a family, you have to be considerate of what will happen if you report such a matter. The other issue that we found in relation to sexual harassment was that there is lack of confidentiality of those staff members who are responsible to deal with such matters. And this was of great concern to the CSC. It was clear from the little evidence received that sexual harassment is largely ignored by the public service, and victims would rather use the EAP, Employee Assistance Program, counseling rather than use the system that's been put in place to deal with sexual harassment cases. It is only through the EAP that sometimes the department comes to learn that the harassment happening within the department. The other key finding that we found is that the role that the Office on the Status of Women plays in supporting and encouraging gender mainstreaming is as follows. OSW does not have institutional capacity, as I mentioned earlier. They only had 6 officials when we conducted the study. In addition, they have other responsibilities. They are expected to participate in intergovernmental partnerships where they act as support to government, stretching their limited resources to capacity. Between the Commission on Gender Equality and OSW, we found that they are resulting in the overall lack of coordination and communication between the OSW, CGE, and DPSA. And this is just part of the institutions that are responsible for ensuring that there is gender mainstreaming in the public service. Now, in order for the OSW to fulfill its mandate effectively, the TSC felt that there should be a clear definition of what this office role is in relation to the other stakeholders on gender mainstreaming in the public service. After having gone through the study, the following recommendations were put together. The first one is accelerate empowerment of women, a specific program targeting women on accelerated learning for specific roles and senior positions departments should be introduced by SAMHSA, because it's the institution that's responsible for training. And in order to qualify for such training, what the TSC recommends is that there should be a target, and also there should be competency testing before people can be accepted to this program. The second recommendation, improve gender representativity profile in recruitment and promotion. In order to change the profile of government, especially at senior levels, it is proposed that recruitment should specifically target women for senior positions within a set period. We know that the next target date is 2009, but obviously for us to reach 2009, there should be a shorter period that within which certain targets can be met. The other recommendation is effective gender structures and processes. Gender should be incorporated into departmental strategic plans with clear activity plans and indicators. This is after you have put together your targets, the numbers, we should also include in your plan activities and indicators. If departments are to mainstream gender, visible mechanisms to coordinate and monitor the implementation of gender-related plans and actions need to be put into place. Gender mainstreaming activities and programs must be included in the budgeting processes, because obviously if you have a plan and you don't have money, you end up not implementing that particular plan. Family-friendly policies, as I said earlier, we only have family responsibility leave according to basic conditions of employment act, the PSC suggests that there should, you know, be there should be something done over and above that. The DPSA must put in place a national framework aimed at creating a more enabling environment and recognize the importance of providing social benefits to families. This framework should compel the partners to provide for breastfeeding facilities, flexi time to accommodate child caring considerations, and considerations to be given for child care facilities. The recommendation relating to management responses to gender mainstreaming obviously would relate to awareness. It should be compulsory for all senior managers to be sensitized about gender management skills and to generally raise the level of awareness of senior management members. Unless the organizational culture changes to ensure empowerment of both women and men through equal participation in decision-making on issues which affect their lives, gender equality will not happen, and therefore gender mainstream will happen in part, not completely. The other recommendation relates to improved gender relations. A more supportive environment must be created for sexual harassment to be reported and addressed outside of normal grievance and disciplinary processes. What I want to mention is that most of the people, because there is no gender policy, so the sexual harassment policy within the workplace, they would use the grievance rules process. And that is not correct, because if you have a sexual harassment policy, it will guide you on how to take your matter further if you are a victim. The other issue relates to the people that are dealing with employee grievances. It is suggested that they should sign confidentiality clause that ensures that matters brought to their attention are dealt with in a professional manner. And this obviously will support and strengthen what is in the code of conduct for employees, because even the public service regulation says people should conduct themselves in such a manner that they treat other people's issues with confidentiality. So if there is a confidentiality clause, obviously people would know that they are obliged not to divulge what they have paid. Effective coordination and collaboration for gender mainstreaming in the public service is another recommendation, and this is should be done in the following. If the role and mandate of the OSW is to promote gender mainstreaming in the public service and to monitor its implementation, then it is critical that the OSW should have skills and resources to be able to implement that their mandate and be held accountable for that. Right now, because they're falling short on resources, they would not be able to carry through their mandate properly. Part of the mandate of the OSW should be to enhance the efficiency of national gender machinery at national and provincial level, and to develop effective collaborations, collaborative strategies. The next recommendation that the PSC has is institutional roles and accountability. In order for gender mainstreaming to become a success, to the collective effort of all role players will be required to ensure that policy framework is in place and that there is compliance. The roles of gender commission, roles of OSW obviously come into play here. Specific roles to be played by institutions such as OSW as well as senior managers and gender practitioners are therefore proposed. In the report you'll see there is a table that we've put together to show who is supposed to play what role. in conclusion, women's access to political power and decision-making has improved since 1994, because we did not have a baseline at that time. We don't know how fast we have moved, but we know for certain that by 2005, we have reached a target of 30%. There is strong representation of women in national and provincial and local legislative branches of government. And in some government departments, if you go through the report, you'll see that they've exceeded even the 50% that we are talking about for 2009. The challenge to institutions in public service is to change the culture in order to be more responsive to the needs of women public servants. Through this report, the PSC would like to believe that it will finally progress the notion that gender mainstream is all about setting and achieving numerical targets. There is much more to be done to ensure that empowerment of women in the workplace actually happens. Putting policies and processes in place is but one of the strategies that needs to be strengthened. One more of more importance is the change of attitudes and thereby create the commitment to operationalize such policies and processes. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It's clear, as you have noted, colleagues, that this is a presentation that is based on observations drawn when that study was done. It's therefore a presentation based on practical observation as the commission interacted with people to actually tell stories as to how they actually succeed in dealing with this issue of gender mainstreaming. It's clear, as I indicated, that when you talk of gender, it's not just a question of numbers, but it's a question of numbers plus. So when you then look at an assessment as to where we are, you may then be in a position to debate as to whether having reached 30%, is it 30% of numbers or is it 30% of numbers plus all that it takes. I think these are some of the things that as we engage in a debate here, we may be in a position to address. Of course, in keeping with our tradition to then say, we'll ask questions for clarity, but we'll also get into situations where we debate this issue. To then say, the commission is just leading us in raising those things. You're making observations wherever you are as public representatives and stuff like that, you may then be in a position to engage. Unfortunately, Honorable Councillor, you can only observe and reserve to raise the issues with Honorable Mimi and others outside, but you are welcome to actively observe, and of course that is what we have to do. I'm not sure from a Prof and is there any addition to make?
Not quite, Chair. I think you have summed it very well. This is really a document to lead the debate, but it's really up to the committee members and so on to make the observations, if perhaps to enhance what is before them. I think we have to put it very correctly by way of the way forward.
Now is the time for the committee and other stakeholders. Zambi, you are here. DPSA, you are here. If there is anything that you like to comment on, but that is now our time. Mr. Kakan, Mr. Yulis, Dr. Rosemary, Mr. Mene, and Mr. Matome. Madam Matome, in that order.
Chairperson, I have a practical observation too. And I would like the presenter to make a comment on this. She did touch on that subject, and it reminded me. During research, I have a niece who is a director in Pretoria. I think that's somewhere her treasurer. And we had a graduation, and she was there, a speaker. And during her comments, she said she turned on women who were graduating. It was mainly women. And she said, I'm a director, but I'm warning you, when you reach that point, you must respect your male staff because they resent you scolding them or talking to them or criticizing you in the presence of other staff members simply because they are men, and they resent you bullying them. When you so have a way, she was emphasizing, telling these graduates that they must respect their male counterparts. So I would like to, I didn't understand or approve of what I was just in between. But I would like the presenter to make a comment on that because she had a practical experience on that part. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, let me first tell you a short story. I'm also a member of the Environmental Intelligence Committee. And then a lady found me. And she said to me that 23 years she's in the business, in the fishing business. And for 23 years she gave work to 11 families on the boat. And in that time she had an African guy that was the in charge of the boat. Then this new rules come out. And one of these rules says, if you want the permit, then you must yourself be on that boat. Now, if I take gender and I take woman now, we can say what we want to. There's certain things that women can't do as men. Now, here's the boat. There's no toilets on the boat. It's a boat. It's a vessel. If you employ men on the boat to catch the fish, then I don't think it will be able or very fair to have a woman in charge on the boat. Now, if the woman on the boat have a problem, if she needs to use the toilet or something else or whatever, she can't because there's no toilets on the boat. Now, just because she can't go on the boat herself, they didn't want to issue her with a permit. I'm quite sure whether if she were some guy with big muscles, you would have get a permit. Now, just because it's a woman, she can't work on her own boat. 11 families is sitting at home. Just because they don't issue a permit to a woman. The other thing is what I hear is just a frontline staff as the senior managers. If there is a target to be met, gender, and they don't meet the targets, then this, then we must come and say, PSC is government, or is, then you must take your jacket in and leave the job. Because, I mean, you can't come and tell me today a woman's not equal to a man. My mother was a woman, and she's equal to me. I mean, who am I just because I'm a man? Because I can, you know, lift up something heavier than a woman. I'm a discriminator against a woman. I feel very strongly about this issue. Because they are human beings, just like me and you, sir. And you must treat them equally. Thank you.
Thank for that emphatic message.
Chair, thank you very much. If I page through the report,
you read lack of support, lack of knowledge. There's a lack of knowledge about gender. There's a lack of knowledge and understanding of what is the need. It's changed. So it's clearly a serious problem in all departments in terms of understanding what this is all about. If we go back to the number game, I understand the whole issue about numbers and other issues. The national target, I believe, is 50% by 2009. I think I'm right. At this stage, we are on 30%. The question actually is, how up to standard are we in terms of that 30% that we already reached? And what are we going to do in the next 2 years in terms of the 20% that we still need to cut out all these lack of this and lack of that? I think I'm trying to make a point that we've got time in the next 2 years when we try to get the other 20% to rectify this whole issue. One other issue that struck me is the whole issue of disabilities in senior positions. And the fact that there in 7 provinces no female managers with disabilities are employed. My question is, what are we going to do about that? Because there are targets in terms of disabilities, national targets, and it seems to me we are not getting near that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, on the issue of the structures that are addressing a gender mainstreaming, somewhere in your report you have mentioned that, you know, the attention and a conflict of responsibilities between the OSW and the Commission on Gender Equity. And on your recommendations, it seems you are suggesting another structure, the National Gender Machinery, that is supposed to help with the coordination of activities among these structures. I don't in any way underestimate the importance of gender issues. But are we not in some way having too many structures that ultimately become ineffective? Because we've got the Commission on Gender Equity, we've got the OSW, and so we also have gender desk in departments. And I think by having so many structures, we are creating the possibility of these issues being dealt with ineffectively. Secondly, I want to go to the issue of sexual harassment, like it was raised by my colleague there. But you're saying that junior and senior staff displayed a lack of knowledge and understanding about sexual harassment. I just want you to clarify as to whether these people do not understand what sexual harassment is, or whether there is a problem in dealing with sexual harassment issues, or a reluctance in dealing with these issues. And finally, on the issue of this perception, you have mentioned it as a perception, but it is a part of your report that there is this perception that women managers seem to be hard and behave even worse than men towards other women. But there is another perception that, you know, women don't recognize women as their leaders. So I just want to know as well, in your research, were you able to test these perceptions? Because if you put it here, it gives me an impression that you agree that is the case. And if so, have you tested it? Is it the case? And what about the perception that women who are or women also do not accept other women as leaders? They also have they become rebellious instead of respecting women leaders.
Thank you.
Madam, you see that case, especially address issues far ahead. I think every debate here it will have to come out very clear here and out as really whose issue is it. Is it men's issue, is women's issue, is societal issue, is it the issue for all of us? We trapped in a situation where there is a need for a paradigm shift. But then the issue is then what do you have to have as a special quality to be able to actually see yourself moving along. PFA, somebody, the another thing before we give to PFA to respond. And you're going to volunteer your position in 2009 to give away. Yeah, no, thanks. Okay, we'll take the second round. I have noted Mr. Gorazza, Mr. Strachan, Mr. Mtembe, but let's get the responses on the, not just responses per se, because if I say responses, it's like I'm actually now moving away from the debate issue to then say the question and answer issue, which really is not the question and answer issue, but it's a question of debating issues. We have debated the experience that Uwa Waskakan and others have raised, that these are the things that are actually very clear and practical to see them happen. I've given an opportunity to GPS A and some details, anything before we take GPS.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm representing SAMD. I'd just like to seek guidance from you. I'd like to brief yourself and committee members on the work that we are doing. Can I do it now? It'll take a minute or two, or is this an appropriate time, or shall I wait until the next round?
I think let us have it as a in between these two rounds.
Okay. Thank you. Honorable Chair, and...
After the response by the PSC.
Okay.
After the response, have we get to the next round of questions, then we can actually start with you.
Thank you.
Okay,
yeah, this is GPSA. I also want to do a similar kind of thing to what Sandy wants to do. So we'll do that later. But I just want to raise something for debate here in terms of the conflict of perhaps mandates, in terms of GPSA and OSW. My understanding, in terms of institutional mechanisms, the OSW is a nerve center for the country as such. And I assume that they would be promoting the gender mainstreaming strategy for the country. By virtue of that, they would be promoting the gender mainstreaming strategy for public service. But really, it's actually the mandate of the GPSA to look at public servants per se. So we've actually put a strategy in place, which I will talk to later. But I just wanted to raise that issue for debate, so we can also get clarity. Thank you.
And that's interesting. And I think equally, if the Commission on Gender Equality was here, they would say we're in Chapter 9 institution. And it well within our responsibility as an institution supporting constitutional democracy to look at these issues across the board, in the society, including the public service. It's a very interesting debate. I think we'll actually get to that lively. This study, like we're saying, the PSC has conducted a study, presented a report on the observations, the findings, and stuff like that. They then will then assist us when you come in and somebody in terms of what you're doing, when you come in as DPSA, you will also be looking at what you are doing against this practical situation that the study is actually reflecting, so that we then can then be able to like sort of come together. Here's it.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'm the one
who's
the
DPSA
that we're here to my team to answer the more complex questions. But I think also in one thing, DPSA, we would want to share some of the guys from around some of the
Unfortunately, my... Okay, let me...
Yeah, but they're very nature. Sometimes, it, you know, they tend to be emotive. Let's start with one of the last questions first, and that was by the Honourable Prime Professor. We speak from the one of the honourable members who spoke about the fact that is the PSC perhaps suggesting that women managers are much more harder, and are we following through that kind of view that came from the study? I think a study of this nature, especially those kind of views, can be very anecdotal. I mean, I could sit here and tell you as a senior management manager in public service my experiences with both male staff or with female staff. I think what the report was trying to really say that one of the prevailing perceptions, which in itself could be a very stereotypical perception, and that is the perception that women managers and women bosses are much more harder. I mean, the flip side of this is from a societal point of view, I think women that are... Sorry? You get it in your house. Okay, from the societal view, the woman wears the pants. But I think also from the...
You need to have a house conference.
Yeah, so I think that, yeah, this is a, because from a societal view, one of the stereotypes and one of the perceptions that also came through, because, I mean, the woman and some of the respondents that that were questioned and interviewed in this report are very much microcosms of the society. And one of the views were that an assertive woman is also generally seen as a woman that is problematic and is bound to cause problems wherever she goes. So these are some of the prevailing stereotypes. But clearly through the respondents that were interviewed, one of the most prevailing perceptions is around the issue of women and female bosses as such. But it's not necessarily a view that the Public Service Commission agrees with, but definitely one of the recurring themes that came through those interactions. The issue of sexual harassment and whether... What is it? Is it a lack of understanding around sexual harassment, or is there a lack of understanding as to how to apply it when these kind of allegations arise? I think the report suggests that the problem is both a lack of understanding. I think people don't quite understand when they're in a situation which could be termed as a sexual harassment situation. And I think others, people that may be termed their harassers, don't particularly or sometimes conveniently don't understand when they've overstepped the mark in relation to their interaction with the receiving party as such. And if you say sexual harassment can happen to both males and females, and that's why I think it's about the party rather than necessarily about females as such, but obviously much more prevalent when dealing with females, or much more prevalent among females. I think the problem with the way in which we've taken sexual harassment policy, as a public service commission, I think we've termed sexual harassment as a transgression in the workplace, and as a transgression or a potential or an allegation of misconduct, it should then ideally be dealt with in your grievance procedures and your disciplinary procedures. I think what the Public Service Commission is saying, given the sensitivity of the issues around sexual harassment and the kind of lack of understanding and the lack of appreciation around implementation, it is not sufficient to just use the grievance procedures and the disciplinary procedures to deal with it. And more needs to be done. And in this sense, what we're really saying is you should have departmental-specific policies which actually help to understand this transgression in a much more fuller sense, and perhaps will assist people much more in dealing with it when they are faced with such a situation. Yes, the issues of structures and the issue around tension, quite clearly what was clear from the research done by the Public Service Commission, there's definitely overlapping mandates. Nothing is in black and white. And I think everybody has a kind of mandate of sorts when it comes to gender. Whether you're talking about the Gender Commission, whether you're talking about the Office of the Status of Women, whether you're talking about DPSA, whether you're talking about Public Service Commission. I think what the Public Service Commission is saying, there's got to be tighter coordination to make this, to make it much more coherent and much more understanding. And we're definitely not introducing a new structure. Our view is that there's too many structures around the gender, the national gender machinery. And we really think that it is important that there must be a greater coordination. I think, honorable member, you would also appreciate coming straight of the straight out of the Professor Carter's recommendation that the issue of how the different, different departments and the different organizations are dealing with the gender issue is causing certain problems because of the unnecessary tensions that are arising and because these structures are not coming together to bring about a collective and a coherence in dealing with these issues. And I think that kind of criticism and that kind of thing is coming through quite regularly, especially when you engage on gender issues. And we must ask ourselves, I think the debate should be, why is it always, this, why is the issue around gender always so contentious, especially with the structures that's supposed to be promoting and improving this, this kind of situation. And I think we need to ask ourselves, why is it always so difficult to kind of be some coherence when it talk, when it's done as dealing with gender equality? And then I think a fair amount of criticism must fall on many of us in relation to why this is actually happening. I want to also then raise the issue around disability and people with disability, and let's also let us talk about the actual numeric targets. In 1999, the public service targets on the white paper were that by 1999, people with disability should comprise 2% of the public service. In 2002, the Public Service Commission came out with a report and strongly cautioned that unless there is dramatic intervention in the way we're dealing with this problem, we will end up in 2005 and we would not have met our targets. We are in 2007 and those targets have not been met. It is in actually in a worse off situation in some instances than our 2002 report. And clearly more needs to be done in relation to this. And what we're saying as a public service commission, and interesting enough, we've decided we need to also lead in terms of how we can deal with this issue differently. And tomorrow, for the first time, we will be initiating what we call a disciplinary inquiries, where it's not sufficient that heads of department in writing tell us what is their problems with meeting these targets, but they actually come before the Public Service Commission as heads of department, not delegated to one of the, to the HR staff or the corporate staff, but they come as senior management leadership and respond to what are the real serious problems around why the public service, the public service is failing in this area. Is there perhaps a problem around the targets that we've set for ourselves? 1999, we couldn't meet them. 2002, we couldn't meet them. 2005, we haven't met them. 2007. Can we really explain it by just a lack of senior management commitment to the issue? I'm thinking that the issues are becoming much more deeper than just that kind of explanation. And I think coming out of these inquiries, hopefully the Public Service Commission can be much more definitive around some of the problems that we're seeing in this area. But the way it is going, I think we'd like to go on record again saying, by 2009, we still would not have met those targets unless something gets done in relation to that. For us, that's very clear. The issue around the targets around females, 50%, I mean, in some cases we can applaud the fact that 50% has finally been met, although if you look at the case of Western case, etc., those 50% has not been met. But again, it took us from 1999 to 2007 to meet those targets. Are we realistically in the next 2 years going to meet the 50% target? I think we need to ask ourselves that.
But I think more importantly, we need to ask, how do we reach these kind of targets, or how do we determine these kind of targets? And I'm not convinced there's sufficient debate around the determination of these kind of targets. Because these kinds of determination of such targets must have an underlying debate in relation to implementation and action plan as well. And in many cases, we'll be faced with these targets and not necessarily as senior management with a kind of action plan that can show acceleration. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm all for the 50% target by 2009. But I want us to be set up to meeting those targets. I don't want us as senior management to be set up for failure in relation to meeting those targets. So what I'm saying is completely as a concern around those kind of issues. And I was just trying to see if there's, I think a lot of it was around the targets. Okay, I think I'll leave it over to you guys, Natalia and Emma. Thanks.
Thank you, DJ. I'm just going to comment on some of the issues, specifically Mr. Kagana. The type of message brought over by that director illustrates what we found in this report. It's clearly putting the message out there that the attitudes of men towards women haven't really changed. And the culture permeates throughout public service. And that is what we're propagating as well. Making part of the SMS training compulsory to have training on gender sensitivity issues and on gender mainstreaming. But that's a typical type of a male response to females. And I think that it's pitiful really that a senior manager, a female senior manager, should have a specific respect for her male subordinates vis-a-vis her female subordinates. As far as the sexual harassment policies are concerned, what we found in the study in the sample of departments that were included in our study was that there were 8 draft policies in place, and there were 3 approved policies that had been adopted by departments and that was in the process of being applied. As far as the target setting is concerned, the DG has raised a lot of issues around this. Departments are, in terms of the Department of Labor, they must develop employment equity plans, and they must implement these employment equity plans. The reality, however, is the employment equity plan sets out all these. First of all, it confirms that the targets of cabinet, and it sets out elaborate plans on how this is to be achieved. But the proof is in the pudding. Are the plans really being applied by the department in practice? And that is the difficulty that one has in meeting these targets set by cabinet. Elaborate plans are put in place, but are these actually being acted upon? I think those are the issues that I would comment on.
Okay, thank you. On the issue relating to the woman director, I would say she needs to be empowered, because as a manager you don't have to really proceed with the gender stereotype that happens in the family or wherever. If you are a manager, you have to be respected by everybody irrespective of their sex. And relating to sexual harassment, I think my Ahmed and Odette has mentioned what needs to be done. And I can set an example of what happened in one of the focus group discussions. One manager said they are planning to have a workshop on sexual harassment. But later on, in another focus group in the same department, some of the people who are staff members were saying that they've never heard of the sexual harassment workshop that was supposed to be said. So clearly here it shows that there's no knowledge of what sexual harassment is, and also there is no policy. Because somebody was giving the impression that all is in order, the other one was saying, we've never heard of this. And the National Gender Machinery is not going to be another new institution that's going to be put in place. It's an institution that comprises of all the existing institutions. It comprises of the OSW, the Gender Commission, the Human Rights Commission, civil society like Men's Forum. They come together yearly to put together a plan on what they're going to do on addressing gender equality and empowerment of women. So all what we are saying is that the gender, National Gender Missionary should be seen to be working. On the lack of support and knowledge, I think the appropriate institutions will have to use the National Gender Missionary to be able to move forward. Yeah, I think that's the rest of it because the others have been answered by previously.
Thank you very much. And thanks for responding in a debating fashion. The DG was like setting the tone that let's look at it. Now, when we say whose issue is this, it's actually our issue, all of us. Now, what is it that we have to do? Can you come from a society that does not respond positively to the issue of gender as one, but when you become a public servant, you become different to the society that you are actually coming from? How do we actually take the struggle even to our home? Where does it start, actually, to our school? So that even if we fail ourselves, we can then be sure that we will succeed. But you'll find these tendencies are even holding even at the school. So I think we need to agree that this is a debate that actually has to be taken at all levels so that we can be able to then move. Because if the study would establish that there are some women who prefer to have men as managers, for those reasons that indicated there, really it becomes an issue. I actually read one newspaper article which was actually writing something about it. It said 1 out of 10 women that they interviewed. I mean 7 out of 10 would say, I rather have a man as my boss. Then that shows that, I mean, these things are there. So what is it that we think we may need to do? I don't think that it is through pushing. We can't be only emotional on the issue, but we have to be careful and get deep into the issue and say what is it that we may actually have to do. Before we take Honorable Gawaza, Sanjay, and Tembu and others, can we then say something? You come in and then DPSA come in, talk about what you do. Try to relate it also to what do you think, what your comments and on the report, on the study that has been done, where we're giving a report today. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Committee Members. I'm pleased to announce that Sandy is driving a major gender mainstreaming initiative together with GPSA and the Office of the Status of Women. You see, Sandy normally gets negative criticism and we're told to pull up our socks, so as good public servants, we've heeded the call, and before the report even got tabled, we kind of predicted the future and we kind of knew what some of the recommendations were going to be, so we started working on this a year in advance. And I'm just saying that tongue-in-cheek, but in the process of developing a gender mainstreaming training program and made major headway, and we made this start last year. The gender mainstreaming project proposes the development and implementation of a gender mainstreaming program that will be administered to plus or minus 4,500 public service employees. And we've received major funding from CEDA for this project. It will be implemented over a 3-year period for both senior and middle managers in all 3 spheres of government. Initially, when it was conceptualized, it was only to national and provincial departments, and as a result of consultations that we had with local government, it is now part of the plans that we will be also training people from all the different municipalities. We have already begun with the first year, which is characterized by consultations with key stakeholders for the development of an accredited training program. And I'd like to pick up on what the DG from the Public Service Commission mentioned earlier, that this is a very difficult terrain to work in. And I think the reason for that is people are very passionate about the issues of gender. However, we managed to get, we consulted with 27 gender experts from all over the country, brought people together into the same room and developed a unit standard with the assistance of the South African Qualifications Authority, and that just got registered this year in June, and we're now embarking on doing the curriculum development. We have just completed the design framework for the curriculum, and next week we will start with curriculum development. So I'm very pleased to announce that because it's a very key development. I've also circulated to you key documents. It's our first year implementation plan, and it's also a brochure which just outlines broadly most of which what I'm saying to you now. The second year, which will be next year, will mainly focus on the implementation of the training. And we realize that training is not the solution to everything. In order to get some of this right, we will also have to do follow-up support to the departments that have received training. And so that's what we will be doing in year three. Some of the objectives of the program, I just want to take you through that quickly. It's to improve the capacity of the public servants in departments to mainstream gender considerations into service delivery, the internal functions, strategies, the project and program development, and hopefully we want to also increase the capacity of departments to conduct their own training programs. We've taken into consideration, fortunately, we were able to have discussions with Public Service Commission, and we were alerted to some of their recommendations, and we made sure that in the design of the project, we took into account some of their key recommendations. If you look at, and I'll just highlight a few, one of the things that they mentioned is to adopt a toolkit approach, and that's what our training program is going to be. We will be developing a toolkit and a checklist as outlined in the recommendations of the report, and a guide to gender mainstreaming. So the kind of gaps that the report alludes to, lack of knowledge, lack of this, lack of that, we have taken all of that into consideration and have brought that into our training program. We've also, another recommendation is that this needs to be located within the framework of change management because people need to change their attitudes. And we've taken into account, we've studied very carefully the white paper on public service transformation and what is alluded to there with regard to change management. And so we've located this gender mainstreaming training program within that paradigm. And we're hoping through this it will assist with the transformational objectives of the state. I think one of the things I would like to table for discussion is while SAMDI can come up with a training program, that is not going to be the only answer to what needs to happen if we want to achieve our targets and we want transformation to take place and we want attitudes to change. There has to be some kind of, I don't want to use the word compulsion, but I think the time has come where we mustn't shy away from using the word, that in order to make something like this happen, it perhaps needs to be a compulsory training program for people, especially at senior management level in the public service. One of the things that was discussed is that this unit standard that we developed becomes a core competence in three training programs. One is the one in project management, the other one is the public service qualification, and the third one is the management qualification. But that hasn't happened yet, and SACWA proposed that, but they said it will take some time before that happens. And perhaps one of the concrete things that can come out of this is if the Honorable Chair and committee members could you know, provide us with some guidance in terms of, is it possible for this to become a compulsory training program within the public service? And I'd like to stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. The Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, just a very quick input on trying to show an integrated approach. At the outset, I must say that this report coming out from the PSC was well carried, because it coincides very well with some of the things that we've been putting in place. So it kind of, by saying what it's saying, it justifies the program that SAMHSA and DPSA is putting out. The reason being is that what is being said in the PSC report is absolutely, the essential items that we've found to be barriers that are in terms of promoting gender equality. And, of course, in terms of our mandate, we would have to look at the equity target of 50%, and we have to look at some of those policies that were raised. But we needed to look at that in terms of, you don't just put out the policy, you don't just put out measures to attain the target, but you need to locate it. So what we did as DPSA was we located it within a strategic framework for gender equality, which Minister launched during the 16 days last year, and it's on the website, but it's currently being finalized, so I didn't bring copies. But if you wish for copies, it's on the website. This document is going beyond numbers, so that we look at the numbers issue, we look at what we need to put in place in terms of support programs, in terms of pushing forward some of the various issues. But some of the major issues that we are picking up is exactly what the audit report is talking about, and I want to just raise them again. The capacity of gender focal points in order to promote gender equality, it's absolutely a challenge. The level at which the gender focal point is appointed in the department, most of them are at level 9 and below. I think 7, if I'm not mistaken, 7 out of the 37 national departments have gender focal points at a director or even at a chief director level. I think only 9 of the national departments have dedicated gender units. The national policy document that Cabinet approved in 2000 was talking about the gender focal point reporting directly to a DG. And the survey that was done when I was in the OSW found that no department has its gender focal point reporting to a DG. So these are some of the issues that we were picking up. And, we looked at the family-friendly policies. We looked at the fact that sexual harassment is right. And what we have in place at the moment is what the Department of Labor has out, the Code of Good Practice on handling sexual harassment cases, which actually tells you how the department, what they need to put in place in terms of structures and how to handle the issues. But, of course, it's not happening that way. We're looking at the childcare policies as well. But one of the things that I want to raise with the PSC being here is what we picked up on the roadshows we conducted on these books this year. We did roadshows in all 9 provinces, and one of the common things that came out is the fact that the commitment at the highest level, that means at the head of department or the director general, is one thing. It's just a bit questionable. So people were raising, employees were raising questions like, how is it possible that we all comply to the Public Service Public Finance Management Act, and we comply to it? What about it makes us comply to it? What about it makes us comply to the EES? So they were asking us, is there no way that we can put in place something that enforces compliance in terms of gender, in terms of disability? And, they were questioning about whether the key performance areas of heads of departments, she did not carry these 2 particular areas. And we did indicate that we would want to negotiate with the PSC on this matter. So it's the perfect area in which to raise debate on that. They were calling it a compliance penalty. I want to just add that on Monday, the 27th of August, the public service is having a high-level roundtable. it's a kind of a strategic approach in answer to the fact that there is sometimes no commitment by certain heads of departments. So what we did was we putting forward an 8-principle head of department action plan, which carries the 8 fundamental principles that they should enforce in their department, and in totality, you would actually be working towards promoting gender equality. And in order to launch this, we decided to invite all the national heads of departments, the director general, and we've invited the 9 director generals from the provinces. But we've made 149 framed copies, so we will issue it out to every head of department. But on the program, we have Minister Munaketi looking at the issue of the policy environment. We have Minister Fahad looking at the issue of the institutional mechanism and why there's lack of compliance by departments. We have the PSC doing a presentation on the challenges of gender mainstreaming and the findings of this report. We've got the chairperson of the Commission on Employment Equity that is looking at why affirmative action is a positive step in fast-tracking the gender parity target. And then we've got the DG of DPSA looking at the possibility of us putting a role, a role for the public sector women managers sort of. So there are a number of issues that are coming forward, in terms of at that level. But I think that the major challenge for us is the implementation at the departmental level. And to look at strategies on how to address that. That is fundamentally what would actually make the change in gender equality. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe that Zambi and UKFA working as a team as an indicator, you can realize that there are challenges. So do you think that if we were to succeed in implementing what you say we need to do, the training, all these things you talk about, and the PSC is to conduct a study again a month after or a year after implementing what we say we need to, are we going to see a different picture? If we may not see a different picture, what really is at play? What are those things that we see on the spectrum? Babal.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Some of the comments that I wanted to make have been commented on already by a number of the speakers. But I do just want to make those observations anyway. I want to start off by making reference to the question of the empowerment of women and suggest that perhaps when we introduced the Skills Development Act, we were responding to, the general lack of skills for the economy of the country, generally speaking. But perhaps when we talk about women empowerment, we didn't relate that question of skills development we didn't focus on women as one of the groups that are doubly disadvantaged because of generally lack of skills, especially among blacks and particularly Africans, and simply because they were also, undermined as women in the process. And we needed to make a special focus, taking advantage of the skills development policies. And perhaps that's the direction we need to take. I think Samti has made reference to that, and the DPSA has just made reference to that as well. We need then a coordinated approach to this focus on empowering women, especially in senior management positions. I want to suggest also that so far as the question of the family-friendly policies and what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act provides for now, first we need a study of what the other countries have done with regard to this matter. because quite clearly the provisions of the Conditions of Employment Act are inadequate. I happened, before I became a member of this institution, I happened to attend a World Conference on Labor Relations, and some of the issues that were discussed there were around the question of flexibility in terms of employment to allow women in particular this kind of flexibility so that they are able to address, you know, issues that are related to family without undermining their employment responsibility. But of course, some of the things were being said there, and I must caution, were bordering on casualization. So when we do that kind of study, it must be for purposes of understanding what it is that other countries are doing, where can we improve on our own, on the provisions of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, but avoid the question of casualizing women in their employment. The next issue that I want to comment on is with regard with recruitment and promotion practices. There is a second point which says women feel disadvantaged from the onset because they have practical needs that impact on their ability to apply for certain jobs. Does this suggest that the advert that we put out, in a subtle way, do disadvantage women? Maybe we need to look at that as well. Because if they feel disadvantaged from the onset, from the time they look at the advert, then that becomes a problem. And that stops them from you know, applying, because already the kind of adverts we put out are suggesting that they might not make it. Chair, on the question of the structure, the CGE, the OFW, and so on, don't we have a case for researching the possibility of collapsing these structures into one, so that we avoid this tension between these two structures? But perhaps we need to look into the objectives for which they were created in the first instance, and see whether we cannot work around those and put together a single structure to look at the gender issues. Because part of the problem, perhaps, we were creating all these many structures, not only on gender, but on various other issues, to address the challenges that we had inherited from the apartheid past. But we are 13, 14 years into the democracy. We have had these structures for quite some time. Some of them have a problem in terms of their own operation, in terms of, you know, accountability, in terms of role functions and responsibilities vis-à-vis other existing structures in the same terrain. Shouldn't we perhaps, you know, revisit these structures, particularly on women, and see how best we can restructure them such that, you know, we have one coherent structure that looks across the whole gender issue. And lastly, Chairperson, the question of, again, going back to family-friendly policies at the end, where you talk about the recommendations. What's the end? I think the observations that I do want to make would relate also to the Department of Education, and unfortunately they are not here, but being part of the public service, I let me make the comment. I think part of the challenge that we still have is with regard to the provision of early childhood education, so that when parents are at work, we are assured that children are being taken care of and in fact they are learning. We need to look into that. Secondly, a point was made a couple of months back by UNICEF that the South African education system lacks the provision of childcare and child education from age zero onwards, and perhaps we needed to look into that as well, and not just, you know, any childhood development, meaning from perhaps age six or so, but from age zero. Lastly, Chairperson, we do need to discuss the question of community-based child care centers as part of a bigger picture that looks into child care and child education. And perhaps it's not a matter that must lie with government alone. Perhaps the private sector should come into the picture as well, because the government might not have all the resources in the world to look into that matter. But how do we deal with the private-public partnership in order to address broadly the question of child care and early childhood education, and make it possible, therefore, for women employees to be less stressed about the condition of their children while they're at work? Because, as has been mentioned here by the study, it is clear that the question of child care is largely the burden of women up to now. If I'm a father and I say I'm taking, you know, a family leave to take care of my family, for my children, I'm looked at with some, you know, suspicion. They laugh at me and they joke that I'm taking leave to look after children and so on and so on. That also needs to, it's an attitude that needs to be worked at and be changed. But I think we need to address all of these issues so that women don't stress so much because they are not so sure about, you know, the condition of their children whilst they are at work. But also men must take responsibility, full responsibility for that matter. Thank you.
Thanks for the thought.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I have been listening to the observation from Public Service Commission, Bambi, and UPSA, what it says to me is that they differently set preparing their report or doing their analysis at different cases, at different times. But when they present here, it's very clear that the challenges that are faced by PMC, they do reflect in some UPSA. So this is probably the same show that with what they have presented to us today, the challenge is that integration should actually be the main tool that we are going to use, because they do differently, but the results are the same. And I think in the gender perspective, with the experience that I had, integration has actually been a challenge, and coordination, everything. demonstrated in the Public Service Commission analysis that there has to be integration, there has to be monitoring, so that you can be able to see implementation of gender mainstreaming. I'm rather worried to hear that there are skilled senior managers in the department or government institutions who still say by now that they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the understanding of gender issues. Because all along, I think it's since 1999, where the National Gender Machinery was pushed and there has been some education going on. But it's still really amazing to hear that there are some who say they still don't understand. What I think here is the problem is that it's the attitude. That perhaps the structures that are here today, they should look at the attitude. And there is an old saying that says you change attitude means education, education, education. Training. I think we should work more on the attitude of these people, because it's not for the first time. You will not be inventing the wheel. You are just trying to reinforce or to sit back and say, where are we going from? Like what it has is that it is very difficult if we have been brought up and socialized in a community where a stereotypical is like the place of a girl in the kitchen. You are not to educate a boy more than a girl. And then sooner or later you find yourself as a public servant. And then now you have to, you know, to believe in the gender, to shed away the typical ways that can be inculcated through socialization. So I think we really have to look at how we work on the attitude, because I want to believe that sharing of knowledge, sharing of capacity building has been done. But I believe with more education, more integration, more coordination, definitely will meet our target. The next point that I want to address is the one of the Office on the Status of Women. I am happy to see that through SAMHSA and EPSA, they are going to involve the Office on the Status of Women. And maybe the confusion and tension between the OSW and the PGE will come to an end. But what I would like to say is that, and I hope that in your endeavors, you will actually look at the member from the PSA, the gender focal points in the OSW are actually an ad hoc place. They don't exist as gender focal points in permanent. They are just an ad hoc. So find that a certain practice the next time you do another thing, or still have other things to do. And as we said, that the Office on the Status of Women is headed by persons who don't sit in decision-making positions. Find that they are the directors or they are deputy directors. They have to go via the director general. Sometimes the information is given to the DG, it never even reaches the decision-making table because the DG is not interested. Or maybe the DG will say, I do not have the knowledge. So I think those are the aspects that we actually have to focus more on. So on the report from the analysis from the PSA, on the perception that women, when they are in decision-making positions, they are really hard and they are really like the lioness. I want to agree with that, and I happen to be a victim of such a situation. I was waiting in the municipality, and like now we have women really women. Women, when they get to leadership positions, they are very hard. Can you be prepared to be led by the men? And I alone, I normally say, have we need to work on the attitude of the women, because I believe that the environment is right for us in South Africa. There is heavy legislation, there are structures. But if us women, we are not yet liberated, us women, we have got to liberate ourselves. So that when a woman is on a decision-making position, she must feel that if I have to go up, I have to go up with all the other women. But when the woman is there, if I survive this, the PhD syndrome is still very, very still very highly practiced by women in this position. So I think that is another aspect that we have to focus on. Try and change the attitude of the women. That when you go up, you go up there so that you can be able to empower other women. Don't be happy that you go up and then you put all the other women aside so that at the end of the day, you are the only one who decides that. It cannot happen in the community that only one person is in the community. So I would really ask those who are women to actually be there. That's the perception, but it's there. It's happening. And I would like to say one more, as I say that we have been education has been going on, capacity has been going on. I'm very much happy about what Public Service Commission has suggested, that from now onwards they are going to call the heads of departments to come and appear in front of them and say, what is the problem? I think that is one element that we have been electing monitoring and accountability. You find that all these laws are there, all these things are there, but we don't have a tool for monitoring and accountability. So I would very much say to the Public Service Commission, I think we are heading to the right direction. Do it, and I hope with all the other strides that have been done by Public Service GPSA, family, OSW, will definitely get where we like. Thank you.
Thank you. Some of the things I wanted to say have already been highlighted by the previous speaker, but for the sake of emphasis, probably one way. We touched on them by way of adding more perspective. Firstly, Chairperson, I want to start by saying that perhaps as a country which has set itself the goal of creating a non-racist and a non-racial democratic country, I think generally we've made progress. One should start on that note. And the level of awareness, if we look at the multiplicity of structures, to the point that we are worrying about these multiplicity of structures, which at times may overlap and duplicate. But it does suggest that the issue of addressing gender is high at the public discourse. So on that level, I think we are making progress. And I think in the public sector, a lot of progress has been made. I mean, we recognize it in parliament, local government, etc. But also even at the departmental level, certain progress has been made. I mean, it has been said that certain provinces have reached the target of 30, although it has taken some time from 1994 to the extent to 2005. But progress has been recorded. Now, what is actually coming up from the presentation is that the challenges seem to appear at various levels. One level is purely managerial challenge because we've got a legal framework to address this issue from the constitution and quite a number of what's called and in the department, gender test, etc., is being addressed. So that is one challenge, and which I think it can be addressed from what has been said here. If it is seen as a managerial level, it's simple that now from the strategic plan of the department should reflect that which can then be monitored in terms of implementation. So if we look at it as a managerial problem, it can be addressed. But then now we've got challenges around the say attitudinal, which I've just called as culture. And in my view, that is the major problem. The major problem is cultural. That is to say now, these two deep-rooted and embedded in the psyche of the society, you see. Even some of the people, I mean, we've mentioned a number of examples, I can quote a number of examples. Even some of the public officials who will speak very beautiful and articulate these policies, but when you find them informally, the kind of language that they're speaking is horrible. You see, because it's nice to seem to be progressive, talking that you are that and that. But you know, this theme of strategic compliance, you know, gives a false sense that now we are making progress. It's just that this is a question of just complying. That is one of the challenges when you put a legal framework, you know. Like the 30%, which has been achieved. But if you can, we haven't looked into the question, what makes the 10% they have achieved 30%, like housing, we said, especially housing and so on. What is it? Was it really a strategic compliance meeting a target? Because there was the emphasis that now, it's not just an issue of target, but also the issue of empowerment, you know. So these are some of the issues that we need to look into. What makes these provinces have succeeded while other provinces, especially Western Cape? We need to look into what is it that has made, for example, housing to have achieved, you know, exceedingly well, you know, and what are those, so that we get the best practices which they now can be able to use them in other provinces. I think that's one area that we need to look into. But equally important, we also need to make a follow-up Western Cape. Because with the Western Cape, the first report is that the affirmative action, Western Cape has a problem. Again, with the question of gender, there's a problem. Perhaps we need a follow-up study to look into those things. In terms of what are the impediments, and therefore that now we'll be able to make progress in terms of that. But then now, we always think this question of target and empowerment. That seems to be a notion that now, immediately when it comes to women, we talk of empowerment. Implicit in that kind of thinking is that men are empowered. But is that true? Because the same thing with like addressing the issue of race, you know, affirmative action. You have got that kind of an issue that immediately you talk of this, you imply that these people, the other people don't have skills and the like. So I wanted others, we need to put a balance there. That's to say that there are men who are also not empowered, who need empowerment. What exactly do we mean by empowerment of women? You know, it's not only a question of qualification. There's also cultural empowerment. What I know of, I know an example, I'm saying you with them. There was a post at the Catherine Pichora, a senior corporate chief director, who's got all the qualifications. And then the woman says, oh, Father, I won't be able to go there to Pretoria and leave my children here. I have to drive and come over the weekend. No, I can't do that. You see, those are some of the impediments. But not only that, there are also other issues will his cultural religious? No, you know, I believe I respect my husband. Who's going to cook for my husband? It's not that the woman is being forced or whatever. They themselves. So I'm saying that the legal framework, we need to be careful that now we don't encourage a cut off strategic compliance without addressing substantive issues. I want to believe that the issue of actually addressing the whole societal cycle, you know, and move away. We're making progress, but I think the emphasis should on, in other words, we need to address this problem at a very fundamental level. It cannot be a one-challenge managerial, but also cultural. And I want also to say that now, these structures that are there, I think the problem manifests itself at various levels. And therefore, the question is the question of defining the role and the menu, rather than a single superimposed structure, because the problem is much broader. So I think in the question of visiting, revisiting and redefining the roles of the various structures, so that now we are able to address this problem of ensuring that we achieve equality in terms of gender. And then lastly, which perhaps may account to be very radical, the overarching challenge which has been emphasized is more cultural, because legally and managerially that can be addressed. And perhaps there will be a need of some cultural shock to deal with this, to unfreeze some of the deep rooted, you know, thinking around people. That kind of approach as we can, we will also support the legal framework and the material, you know, solution and that. That kind of an approach will be needed. If we address the question of gender inequality, much as like the question of racial inequality, is more of a paradigm shift, and I think empathy and study also should need to be too. I mean, commissioning our universities look into this question, you know, from that perspective, and come up with some approaches which can begin to work at unfreezing this deeply rooted way of thinking, so that now we're able to make progress. But I want to say that I think as a country, as a nation, we are making progress. And this kind of debate actually sort of sensitize us to put more emphasis and to work much harder, so that now we can achieve the idea of a non-sexist and a non-racist country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim. I don't see that, but in my hands, it looks like that theme of Parliament early in the year that said will deepen debate, if Bob wants to say something. I think we are implementing it here, practical debating on this issue. Mr. Mini, by the way, come from Gauteng.
No?
You come from Gauteng.
Me? Security.
Oh, security. Yeah. No. According to the study here, the province that seems to be doing some good work on place is not good. and the country that you're correctly putting in not only on this, if you remember also on the state of demographic representation, the Western Cape, according to the stats, actually was one of the provinces that actually most of the issue with that. I think you're quite right that we need to do something about that. Prof, and then summarize, throw your hand up, and then we will then be moving towards the closing.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't want to spend take much time. I just wanted to share in the first place, as you called for at the beginning, an observation. You did say that this would be a debate where we'd be making observations and other contributions. And then I perhaps to make one or two comments. I want to start off with an observation, which I would like to share with you. And this is an observation from the which I derive from the Public Service Commission. And to say to you, you know, in the Public Service Commission in the past 10 years, in its leadership at the very senior level, we have had four DGs, perhaps three, who have led the transformation task before us. Two of these DGs were made, two of them were female. And I would like to place on record that we have had an excellent result out of this. Now, when we went out looking for the DGs, I don't recall whether we said we were going to look for a female or a male. We just wanted to get a suitable leader who would assist the Office of the Public Service Commission to discharge its transformation task. And went about, and in all these, particularly the last three instances, we've had, as I say, excellent results. These leaders, these DGs who have led the Public Service Commission through its various phases, you know, the preparatory phase, the take-off phase, and I believe today, where the Commission, we can say, it is at its maturity level. With excellent results. Now, I don't know what lessons to draw from there. I sometimes think that on my part, I was socialized by a very powerful woman. My mother was very powerful, so I know how to listen to the mother. that's besides the point. It's very difficult for me, I'm trying to say, it's very difficult to say, here are the guidelines, there's the mention of guidelines and so on. I don't know if one can speak of them. But then, leading from there to the observation made by Honorable K, the case study that he mentioned, I also find that very instructive, in whichever way you look at it, because we are listening to a case study here. Where the message is, I don't know, it depends how you interpret it. The message is in one respect says, if you are in this position, as a woman, you must be careful, these are the challenges that you are going to meet, and you must be ready for them. Whether it says you must accommodate, or whether it says you must meet them head on, these challenges, and take them in your stride, and run with them. But the gear for success in discussing your job because you've been placed there because of your qualification. But that is now in the course of the discussion for me has also been underpinned by the two observations from SAMD and DPSA. The training program SAMD has introduced us to here, which I think is a very welcome development. But I ask myself, in that compulsory training program, would one want to focus it on men, or would one want to focus it on women? Would one want to focus it on both, men and women, who would, of course, be carrying these tasks? These are questions I think that experience can teach us, but I do believe yes, training program, focus training program, which would deal with the needs, if you like, the needs of socialization, which would deal with the other problems that we all come from. I did say to my DG before she kicked me out of my seat, that's another powerful example. It's a matter of my faith, and I had to concede. I was saying that by bringing up, I was brought up in a generation where you were taught that that was the celebration of a certain child, which perhaps also some of our children are brought up to men, boys versus girls, this kind of thing, and you want to demystify that. But this leads then to the question that I understood the PSA to be raising here, or suggesting here. Can we put in place an instrument that would enforce gender parity, gender equity? Very interesting question. But I think an answer was thrown in later on. And this would seem to conform with our experience, hence what Odette was announcing earlier on, that we in the Commission are now going out to interrogate the senior leadership about their discharging of the responsibility in terms of the employment of the people with disabilities. And that is monitoring. Strong monitoring. Vigorous, robust monitoring to ensure that people qualify. It would seem to me, rather than an instrument the likes of the TFMA, better instrument would be monitoring to ensure that these things come about. Take a chair. I thought this would be some of the questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for giving me another opportunity. Just briefly, I think it's important for us, especially those of us who have got the responsibility of educating our people, families, the DPSA, the public representatives who are here, the educators who are here. How do women specifically understand the word empowerment to mean? I think that is very important because I personally, without sounding arrogant, I don't believe anybody can empower me except myself. As government, we have the responsibility to create an enabling environment for women to empower themselves. And I think as we educate women, let women understand that this can become a reality only if we, I need to put my cap as a woman now, as a chairperson. That we have got it. we have got it within ourselves to make a difference. And for as long as we do not live up to that, we will forever be trying to put up targets. We can try to come up with some compliance mechanisms. But before women themselves realize the power and the potential that they have, and make use of that, we will forever be running in circles. Thank you.
Chairperson, this is directed to Odette mainly, and Professor just touched on it. It has never been addressed because from, as you say, 94, 99, the question of people with disability. Surely, when this comes up, I always ask myself, have we identified the problem? Is it not true to say the problem is they are not there? Because I always say, since that period, you've been talking about battling to get 2%. Isn't proof that people with disability are not there to fill those positions so that you obtain that percentage? Isn't that the problem? That's one. The last question is, perhaps Minit can tell me better as a white person. Why is it that white people never argue about gender? Why isn't that white women
never talk about gender. They are happy, they are satisfied. Why isn't that in this parliament? Before, there was, remember the first, it was a talk, they had that first white woman who was the Minister of Health. I forget her name. There was this Helen Suzman. That's the end. And there was no hullabaloo about a certain percentage of women in parliament. And the society, the white sector, never cared. So I asked myself, why? Why are the white women not concerned about filling senior position in private sector, in the government? Why? I don't have an answer. Perhaps Mindy can answer that. It's always a question with me. Thank you.
Maybe when we respond to that question, we may slightly amend it. just slightly amend it and say the issue in trying to answer the question of gender. The question of gender, and that's a good issue. And we say it's an issue for all of us. We then say, we without sounding judgmental, just say, are we all convinced? Are we all convinced that we have a serious issue to address? The question of societal rights that Wawam Chembu spoke about, actually also come to that, so that we answer that question also. I think we will not start with Matamino, we'll start with you. Let's try to answer all these questions, and then Matamino will come in. So that was on a lighter note, but I was just saying so that it does not come out like this committee is saying. Things that some people may interpret to see it was on issues of the art. There's a direct question to the DG. You said it's the DG and Prof.
Yeah, and
Prof. The DPSA wants to say something. Mayor Sage wants to say something. This will be the very last case. So the DPSA wants to say something. By the way, I'm from the DPSA. Okay. So two DPSA, one for further comment. And this side is very active. That side is selectively active. Uttar, DGA.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I just want to comment on one of the comments that the Honourable Member at the back said, that we need to make it possible for women to be less stressed about their children's needs. And maybe let me give a personal anecdote. I have a matric son that is going to have his matric farewell on Saturday, and I haven't yet gone home to buy his suit, so he's understandably in tears at the moment. Because he doesn't believe he's going to have a suit for his matric farewell on Saturday. But I think these are some of the conflicting demands that we continuously play around with, and it's expected that we navigate ourselves around these things. But I mean, some of these are practical issues. But having said that, the issue on people with disability and the fact that maybe there aren't sufficient skilled people with disability, I think that's the usual response you get from the court. And I think the response from people with disability would say that is actually a poor and lamentable excuse to the issue. But I think we must look at this in terms of its historical context. There was a double discrimination with people with disabilities, especially if you look at the issue of black women, for example. Not only the discrimination about being a black woman, but if you were a black woman with a disability, your opportunity, your educational opportunities were actually almost non-existent. And therefore, there is some argument to be made
around the skills base that you're talking about, or the skills database that is in existence. Let me try and personalize it to the Office of the Public Service Commission. And let me say that as the Office of the Public Service Commission, we haven't yet our 2%. And there are practical difficulties why we haven't yet, and much more complex than the belief that the DG and senior management in the Office of the Public Service Commission has not got the commitment to ensure that this happens. I think we have had an arrangement with DPSA, and that's the Disability People of South Africa, not DPSA, as in the Department of Public Health and Administration. And we've been connected to their skills base, for example, and this is for a few years. And every time when we try to access that skills base, their requirement or their skills base is up to people with disability that are up to a matric qualification level. Now, the TSC is a knowledge-based institution where over 85 to 90% of its posts are actually tertiary level and upward. And every time we try and access, we still haven't successfully accessed a database that gets us into that level. So what we've done in this year is we've taken our learnership program and we've taken a definite bias in our learnership program, we said at least 60% of our learners will be students with disability. And therefore, we hope those students with disability then would apply to come into our permanent post. And the situation as we currently sit, we're sitting now with 7 people with disability in our learners program. And we're hoping that when these posts become available, that they actually will apply and they will be suitable in order to get into to these positions. So there's lots of complexities around it, but I think the issue around the availability of an informative skills base that departments can access, I think that's one of the biggest challenges. Because if there's a skill that, I mean, South Africa says that there's 600,000 people with disability in South Africa. Now you've got, what's 2% of 1.4 million of this? 28,000. So from the 60%, but not 60% employable, Esther. But I don't know how many of those 600,000 are actually employable people with disability. And if you're looking to meet your 2% of having 28,000 people with disability, I think we need to disaggregate to the Public Service Commission and find out how many of those 600,000 people with disability are in the working category. I don't know, for example, how many of them are still children and how many of them are still students. How many of them are employable and employable at what kind of level? So I think that's what we're saying as a Public Service Commission. We've got to disaggregate this argument much more to really understand what the issues are. Because it's very easy to say, well, there's not enough skills. On the other hand, people say, well, saying there's not enough skills in itself is trying to undermine the process. These are the two kind of arguments that are continuously put towards us. What is very interesting that the member from the DPSA, the Disability People's Association, that member will be sitting with the Public Service Commission. So when those kind of arguments come through, those are arguments we can interrogate from his experience as well. So we're trying to balance it in that way. We're not only coming as practitioners and possibly people with less experience on the issue, but we're bringing in people with disabilities that possibly may understand the situation even more deeper than ourselves. And that's why I say these disciplinary inquiries should come out with some very, very interesting aspects and different conclusions, I think, to the argument. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think some of the things that I wanted to raise
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to respond to the honourable member who raised the issue about, the so-called why is it not happening in a certain group. And I can understand the thinking, because it might not be over somewhere. I just wanted to raise that at some point we need to start having debates on why is it that the ideology of patriarchy extends globally. And you know, every nation, every country, every group of women go through the same thing. So it's not related to any one particular race group. It cuts across all this. It might not come out overtly, because there might not be reasons to fight for it the way some groups fight for it. But the ideology of patriarchy is all pervading. And it's the longest lasting ideology. So we need to take debate at some stage in the future.
The very last one.
Thank you, Chief. I just wanted to say today that maybe they should rework their aim there, that it's empowerment for women and men. Because once you say women, the experience is that men actually don't just give a hearing to it. They think that it's a women's issue. Maybe if you actually inculcate into them that this is a societal issue, both men and women have got to take part as our legislation and for the constitution. And I very much like the word used by that when you go to this workshop, you should aim to the fact that when people get out of them, they should actually think differently. And I think this is what has got to be inculcated into women, that the environment is right for them. This is their liberation. And they themselves should be catalysts into this liberation. We as women should start by lasting ourselves. We should start by, empowering ourselves, as one member said, before we can expect another person to do it for us. So they should actually be the catalyst of this. This is their program. It's aimed for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would just like to make a very short response and reassure committee members that it's a gender training program and it includes both men and women. And just to reassure you further, because we think some men need the training more than some women do, but it's going to be both men and women. And then to reassure you further, several committee members have spoken about the whole empowerment factor, and we've taken that into account. A key component of our training program is going to be self-development, because we think that's absolutely critical, and self-awareness, so that's going to be included as well. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, so that was an issue of a national interest. Members of this extended family of public service, we are now coming to the end of our meeting with a note that our way forward is firstly considering the recommendations that the Public Service Commission has presented to us, arising from the study. It's critical. We are going to give attention to that as a committee. Also, we are going to give attention to what somebody has said, issues around whether or not we may not say it is one of the key issues to deal with the whole question of training on gender. The only thing is that once you say compulsory on anything, you stigmatize people's interest to participate in those things become serious. But what I think we need to do is to then say, without saying it's compulsory, but actually get it happening as it is compulsory. And of course, we have noted what the DPSA has said that is actually going to take us forward. You know what is important is that in all those things that we read, we know that as a committee and with our further engagement, all of us will then be in a position to then say, how far do we go in answering a question whose issue it is? It is our issue, all of us, so that from here, when we talk of gender mainstreaming, it comes out very clear. The observations that the study reflect here are far-reaching of observations. That's why it's true that, as Honorable Ntengwe has said, issues around looking at the societal side is a very serious issue. That's why, as a portfolio committee, we have taken a decision we do that. It's just sometimes we find that the program of parliament gets tight. That when you deal with issues like this one, you get a briefing. You don't do that at the committee room like this one. But you go out and do it and give an opportunity for ordinary people to attend. And when these ordinary people attend, they can also engage. You'll realize that if we're to go, from section to section of our communities or society, you'll find that you actually have different intakes. And that is what actually will then assist us in actually going forward and not leave everybody behind. Because that actually becomes a problem. You leave some people behind, they get to be in the majority, they pull you back. And when you recruit people, unfortunately, you are recruiting them from this or that. And then that becomes a serious challenge. I think those are things we're going to look at. The issue that Dr. Rupna Rain raised is a very important issue. The issue of the Commission on Gender Equality. You know, during the country self-assessment process in terms of the absence care review mechanism, I happened to chair one meeting where the Office on the Status of Women had to address that meeting. And the Commission on Gender Equality had to address that meeting. I'm telling you, I realized at that meeting that I needed to have first phoned Mike Weaver. You remember? you remember the former boxing champion? I'm not sure if he's still there. To ask for some power so that I must be able to separate these people. It's very clear that issues around theft, issues around terrain, issues around
mandate conflicting is a very serious issue. You know that the Office on the Status of Women, located in the office of the presidency, looking at themselves as oversight body, but you can also say they are an executive oversight body. But when you look at the Commission on Gender Equality, you find that there is no way that you can use to explain what the Office on the Status of Women do, and that you can't use the very same way to explain what the others the Commission has to do. It's a serious issue. And I think as we consider the ad hoc committee's report on the review of the Chapter 9 institution, the one that is still fresh from the box, and probably we are sure we are going to reprioritize our program. It's also that we are not going to wait for October to look at that report. It will have to come, we have to consider that. Now, it will come out clear as to how do we deal with that. And our portfolio committee comes central to do exactly as Dr. Ruth Naren said, that we need to actually get some of the things. Let them talk to us as this committee, and then we'll see as to how far we can look at that. Of course, we'll have to do an introspection to then say, if we did not approach, and if we don't even up to now approach issues of gender mainstreaming in the same way as we address the issues of addressing the question of skills, as Mr. Gawaza has indicated, what instruments do we think we are putting in place to be able to deal with those things? We need to actually look at those things. These were just by way of some comments. It comes out very clear. Are we talking about empowerment as if it's something coming from other people, or some of empowerment as something that actually comes from us? There are things that anything that you need to be done actually starts by you. You have to actually make a contribution to actually get these things done. How do we actually go on like that? I mean, these are the things that shape our way forward, arising from this. So that was not just a talk show. The experience that our Sakani has and which he shared with us. We'd like to see new experience being shared. But how do we go about it? Even as we set targets, what actually informs us? We come here and we'll get to be very busy. Say, no, the target of PFC is to be able to work on them. Oh, yes. Then we're going to mark you on the basis of what you say. Are you able to perform again? But at what stage do we actually sit and do a policy review and look at target review? The strategic plan, who said the strategic plan should actually include? That's critical, that we needed the strategic plan, that they should actually address issues around gender mainstreaming. We have come to the end of our meeting. Not to the end. Because the committee has to look at some in-house issues. But for just 10 minutes. We have lunch ready at Mark's building that's ready, sign all as we go out here. We want to thank the Commission and to thank DPSA Gambi for your input. Maybe, Prof, you know, when some people, when you thank them, they want to respond. Say, no, don't thank me. You will thank me.